All right. Well, this is the face-to-face podcast series with Virginia Voice. This is Yvonne Mastromano, and we are honored today to be able to welcome Senator Lamont Bagby as our special guest. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure being here and my first interview with you, and I look forward to it.
Thank you so much. You have represented and advocated for Virginia Voice and our mission and our listeners for many years. So I thought we'd start by kind of making our listeners a bit more acquainted, better acquainted with
sure.
you.
Sure.
So you've been in Henrico all your life.
Yes.
Yeah. And you grew up where?
So I grew up right across the street. And so you all are located right here on Azalea Avenue. And so I grew up initially, my grandparents live right next to the raceway. And I grew up in Exes Village, now St. Luke. And then we moved right into the Azalea apartment area, really close to here in Henrico High School. And so I've been in this community all my life and then served as a teacher when I came back from Norfolk State. I served as a teacher at Henrico High School.
Nice. And I was asking you if you had some sort of special talent in the area of performing arts, because I know Henrico High School is now the performing arts, quote unquote, high school of of the area. And
I don't. And I served. I played basketball, but the CFA program had just started when I was a freshman at Henrico High School.
Right.
Had I known more about the program, I probably would have been in the performing arts.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And what
I can say anything now.
Well, I'm a musician as well. So what would be your choice? If you had any choice of any instrument, what would it be?
I would have been the instrument. I would have been a dancer.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. But now I wish I could play the piano. But, you know, it's not too late.
Never too late. That's my first instrument is piano. I taught for a long time. Still have a couple of students on the side. It's my little side hustle.
Yeah.
And when my students don't practice, I always say to them, hello, you know? Do you know how many adults tell me they wish they could play piano?
Yeah.
So that is very cool. Very good information. So you went to Norfolk State, Bachelor of Science degree, and also business education. You have a master's degree in education leadership from VCU. And all of that prepared you to be, I suppose, eventually a state delegate. You represented District 74, which is our district.
Yes.
You were also a state delegate for over 15 years, and you served on the Henrico School Board from 2008 to 2015, and you were in the House of Delegates from 2015 to 2023. And also, you currently serve as the chairman of the Legislative Black Caucus.
Yes, and I'm still a young man.
Yes, you've done a lot and are doing a lot. So you were on the school board for quite some time, and I was wondering, in terms of serving on the school board, which I know is a bit of an arduous task, having spoken to some folks who have done that, did that in some way prepare you for your political career as a delegate and now as Senator Bagby?
I've been able to wear many hats, and I've enjoyed every responsibility I've had in my professional career. I have served the public in some form or fashion. The most enjoyable was serving as a teacher and a coach. The most challenging was serving as a school board member. I really appreciate that opportunity. That was my first elected office. I ran for that office because I wanted to make sure that the resources in Eastern Henrico were equitable. And so that's the reason why I ran for the office and was able to be a part of the allocation and appropriation of dollars to our public school system. But that's where I also realized that there's more opportunity for us with the state budget. And so I'm happy that more individuals that are younger have stepped up to serve on the local level. And now I am trying to influence what it looks like for those individuals that are running for state office, whether that be the House or the Senate. But again, the school board was the most challenging. It is in your face as it relates to elected officials. One thing folks don't play about is their children. And so when you receive a phone call from a parent about their child not being dropped off at the proper bus stop, or something that the teacher did or said to their child, or some resources that the child should have been afforded to provide equity that wasn't afforded to them, that's serious business. I would be in the grocery store. I would be in church. Wherever I was, my family knew that I was a public servant at a young age. My children knew that I needed to be available at all times because public schools, as I shared, is serious business. And when you are responsible for such a large population, 64,000 young people, and the teachers to go along with it, it is a significant responsibility. And it also set me up to have a greater sense of understanding of what it is an elected official should be focused on. And I think some of the individuals that jump straight from their kitchen table to a table making decisions on the state level missed an opportunity by not serving on the local level. And so I've been really fortunate to have that experience. And someone pointed it out to me. I was just elected in March, but someone pointed out the fact that I'm the only former school board member serving in the Senate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that you have just so eloquently tied those two pieces together, which I hadn't thought about. But I will say this from the outside looking in, because I haven't done any of that. But I have been involved in Henrico on various platforms for a long time. And I have seen the difference you have made. I remember being involved with education sort of on the fringes in Henrico. And I remember when there was really quite a disproportionate allocation of, I suppose, funding or at least resources between Eastern Henrico and Western Henrico. That was quite some time ago, and you made a difference.
Yeah. You and I just left an event where Frank Thornton was in attendance, and I got to give him kudos, because when I was on the school board, he was and remains the supervisor, and I would do what I wanted done when I was a teacher, and I would give him a list of projects that I felt needed to be taken care of in the Fairfield District that weren't in the general budget, but he could help me allocate funding from the local budget, from the Henrico budget, and he would knock that list out every time. So I know he is retiring this year, and my good friend Roscoe Cooper is going to be replacing him. But I have to give Frank a lot of credit for a lot of the things that we were able to accomplish related to equity and making sure that our facilities look and feel just as good as the facilities on the western part of the county.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Frank Thornton, I share that respect as well. And you mentioned that you're really working with younger folks to get into various offices. And there's going to be a bit of an opportunity with, 140 state, legislators that are retiring and or leaving office anyway.
Yes. Well, it's 140 members that are, we all run, all 140 of us. And there's about a third in the House, which is 100. So about 33 or so individuals that are retiring or moving on in the House, and then there's a quarter of the Senate that has decided to move on, and so there's a lot of change about to occur in the General Assembly, and so it's a real opportunity for individuals to come in at a good time and grow.
Yes, this is historic, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And you talk about equity, and this is near and dear to our hearts at Virginia Voice. We promote equitable access for individuals with disabilities, including blindness, low vision, and other disabilities that would prevent someone from being able to access visual elements, obviously, but also print material and other resources. And so when we go down to the General Assembly and try to explain what that really means to someone. You have been a force for us, and I just wanted to say thank you. You've represented us in at least two lobby days. You have spoken for us and represented us, and we appreciate that support.
And I thank you all for coming down. Not every advocacy group comes down. Some individuals aren't able to come down. And so I appreciate you all taking the time, making the time, not only to talk, but also to listen, to see where there's opportunities for us to support you. And I think there's going to be some real opportunities for us to increase our support for the work that you all do as we learn more about how we can help, where the Commonwealth of Virginia can sow a seed into the work that you all are doing, because it truly makes a difference to the citizens, not just the citizens that are directly benefiting from it with your services, but those individuals that benefited because we're empowering the individuals that are receiving those services.
I'm pretty passionate about these things. And for the reasons that you mentioned, I think that we have to start with awareness, awareness in terms of the blind experience, but also the intersection of disability rights and accessibility with equal rights, mm-hmm. and human rights, quite frankly, voting rights, transportation, access to basic needs. And I know that this is something that's near and dear to your heart as well. Will you speak on that a bit?
Yeah, and so one of the things as it relates to voting is making sure we get the message out in different forms. Sometimes elected officials like to just send mail, or they want to do a television ad. It's important that in my visit here is making that clear for me, that it's important that we also continue with our robocalls. Sometimes people think robocalls are outdated, but robocalls are a good way to get the information out to a larger group, and also continue to support our radio ads and making sure that we purchase radio ads across a broad spectrum. I think the main thing that we can do as elected officials is to continue to make sure that we are, as candidates, is to make sure that we're promoting our candidacy in different platforms. But there's also an opportunity for us as elected officials to make sure that our Board of Elections, I'm used to saying Board of Education, Board of Elections, are tapping into the resources that are available and getting the information out in the same fashion, as opposed to just mailing the information to voters, making sure that they are also using different platforms to get the word out and the information out. Particularly with these last couple of special elections that we've had, there's been a lot of information and a lot change that has happened as it relates to each election and where to vote and how to vote and when to vote. And it's important for us to get that information to every voter in a couple different ways. And I think mail, robocalls, TV, and radio are beneficial.
Absolutely. And it does create accessibility, to your point, in terms of being able to use the phone. This is how we do surveys. And right now we're in our spring fundraiser, and we've been picking up the phone and just talking to people. Mm-hmm. I think that when you have that live conversation with someone, you can do a lot of things. You can, first of all, be very, have complete transparency about what you're doing. You know, we're not just asking for money, or we're not just asking for attention, or we're not just asking for a vote, but we want you to know what specifically are we doing, mm-hmm. to earn, sure. your trust, and to get your support, and to get that feedback, in terms of what is needed.
Sure.
And I think that you know, part of what I do when I am out in the community is not just say, hey, I'm from Virginia Voice, but you know, what are disability rights? What does it mean to have accessibility? And I think a lot of the misconceptions come from just a lack of understanding.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
you know, when I do presentations, Senator Bagby, for various groups, I always start with asking people to close their eyes. And then I take them back to their home.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, it's at night or any time of day. And you're home. But at night, if you were to go in your house at night, you would turn on the lights.
Mm-hmm.
But don't. Don't turn on the lights. And we go through this entire sort of, it is a demonstration, but it's more important than that, because I think that when there are stereotypes or misconceptions, it's because our living experience is different than someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can get into the space of someone else's lived experience, that's when we start understanding. And understanding brings respect, and respect brings that type of support. And I do think, though, that we can do better in Virginia in terms of supporting full accessibility. At Virginia Voice, we promote accessibility and inclusion beyond compliance. So it's not just about the bare minimum that an organization or a store or a government facility or whatever that particular service or product is. Not just about complying with whatever the ADA statute mm-hmm. is, but going beyond that.
Sure.
And understanding the experience. Would you speak to that a bit?
I think you spoke well on that. And I think even when we're crafting with advocates such as yourself, we're crafting legislation or budget amendments, it's hard to capture everything as it relates to what we want that to be as it comes to fruition. What our hope is, and that's rather we're focused on equity in education, equity in voting rights, equity in housing, all those things that I think every listener you have is impacted by. When we're crafting that legislation, it's hard to put all those pieces into the legislation. We have to make sure that those individuals that we empower to utilize those funds and we appropriate those funds to are utilizing those funds to the best of their ability. That shows up a lot in the area of education, particularly for those students that have IEPs and 504 plans that have special needs.
Mm-hmm.
When they have special needs and we are allocating whether it's federal dollars, state dollars, or local dollars to the respective schools, it's my hope and prayer that when we do that, that the instructor, the educator that is providing the service to that young person is going above and beyond and making sure that whatever resource that child needs, whether that's a special calculator, a special keyboard, and we have that often in our school system, even paper and pen, whatever it is that student needs, we want to make sure that school has the ability to provide that. And it's the same thing with this campus. We want to make sure that you all have the resources that you need, not just for Virginia Voice, but for the full campus to meet the needs of the population that you serve.
Yes. And when you talk about the services and the needs, we have to put a little context to that. As a senator now, you were talking about as a member of a school board, how many students you represented, and now you're representing
mm-hmm.
a lot of residents.
The Henrico school system overall is 64,000, so that's about 8,000 per district. In the House, it's 80,000, and the Senate is a quarter of a million.
There
and
is.
So now I represent right around a quarter of a million of individuals, and of course, the state is made up of over 8 million folks. There's a greater group of individuals and a much larger budget that we're responsible for. And that's one of the things that right now the Commonwealth is at a place where I haven't seen. When I came on to the school board, we were having challenges with budgets up and down. And we were cutting to the bone as it relates to services. And we were trying to figure out how to keep the lights on and keep projects moving. But now the Commonwealth is in a great position. I know some individual families are hurt, but the Commonwealth, make no bones about it, is in a great position and has the funds to invest in our priorities. And so that's my hope as we work towards this budget that has not been signed yet and hasn't been agreed upon yet, that we really focus on financing our priorities.
Yes. And of those 8 million Virginians, 22%, according to the CDC, which is about 1.4 million people, one in five adults, have some disability. And 80% of our listeners lost their sight later in life. So that means that they had their sight, mm-hmm. and then when they lost it, they encountered a new way of living. And other disabilities can sometimes accompany that situation, especially when you think of one in three blind individuals living at or below the poverty level. And so there are health consequences and outcomes when, never mind income, let's just talk about isolation, anxiety, not being able to get to health care. And so there are many health outcomes that lead to blindness. For example, diabetes, diabetic retinopathy, mm-hmm. Is diabetes unchecked or in a very severe situation can lead to some sort of vision loss. And so it's managing those outcomes, which takes support, takes funds. And I often talk about the fact that, you know, with our listeners losing their sight later in life, what did they do for a living? They were doctors, teachers, mm-hmm. Construction workers. Maybe they were government officials.
Sure.
And so just because someone loses their vision doesn't mean they can't bring. And in fact, they can bring much value to the table. And so when we support individuals.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, please.
And so as you say that, it makes me think about my mentors. And I think, I believe mentorship is the greatest thing you can give. And receiving mentorship is so important. When I was at Henrico, we started a mentorship program. When I went onto the school board, we developed $100,000 worth of funding for mentorship programs throughout the county. And so across my career, mentorship has been something I wanted to seed into. But I've also benefited from mentorship programs. And not only mentorship programs, but just mentors in general. When I was at Henrico High School, I had an assistant principal named Bill Parker, who remains my mentor today. Donald McEachin, who passed away, and I serve in his Senate seat, was a mentor. Doug Wilder, who served in the Senate seat that I serve in, remains a mentor today. And when I think about those individuals, I think about individuals that have served and made, you know, I think Governor Wilder wouldn't mind me saying he's up in age a little bit, but he has a lot to give, and that brain of his is so powerful. And the amount of information that he has to give to let it just go without him passing it on to someone would be... it'd just be a catastrophe. So those individuals, not just individuals that are lawyers like Noel or educators like Parker politicians and elected officials like Governor Wilder. But there are so many individuals that still have more to give that we need to make sure that they are in a position, whether that's transportation or just providing a space for them to share with other individuals and continue to be a part of our community, because they're some of our best and brightest that still, as you said, still have a little in the tank to give, and we need to make sure that they are in a position to give it.
Well, you just touched on something very important, mentorship. It was a very big subject at the American Foundation for the Blind, their leadership conference I went to last week. But also, you know, that's what this face-to-face podcast series is all about. It's talking to the people in our community, and some of them have a voice, mm-hmm. like yourself. You're an elected official, and you have a microphone in front of you probably often. However, do you get to sort of talk about the things that are deeply important to you and that intersection that is created with the work that you do? And so I would love to have Governor Wilder come in and talk, and many people who, as you say, can offer so much. We don't want to lose the important information, the passion they mm-hmm. bring to our community, that they have been a part of, have shaped our community in a meaningful way, and we need to instead of having a dot, dot, dot there, we need to put a period there with allowing them to express those challenges or concerns or values. And so that's a great point.
And to that point, if you were to have Governor Wilder on, he would probably express some things that he's not happy with as it relates to what I do. But that's always a good thing. You don't want anyone to suffer in silence. And he's a model of individuals that refuse to suffer in silence. Rather, he likes you or not, he's going to give it to you pretty clear. And so that's what I hope that all of your listeners will do, with not just their elected officials, but also but all individuals that are in charge or impacting their lives in some way, form or fashion, where their resources are at stake. I would trust that they won't suffer in silence, and they also won't let their voices go unheard, and will continue to do everything they can to contribute to our society, our community. And that means letting us know when we're doing something that you don't agree with or you don't like, or if you see an opportunity that we're missing. It makes all of us better, and it makes me appear to be smarter than what I am when your listeners call me or email me and give me some insight as it relates to things that that's not happening. Right around the corner from here, I have a P.O. box at the post office, and I was there the other day, and a couple ladies pulled me to the side and said, "Did you know that this post office is about to close?" And I said, "No, I did not know this post office is about to close." But they just assume that folks like me know that this is happening. So it's important for you not to suffer in silence. And even if you think someone has called because the power is out in your community, you should still call Dominion Energy and let them know that the power is out in your community. So I think that's very important for individuals to be proactive and not suffer in silence, and know that we work for you.
That is a wonderful way to end our discussion, though. I feel like I could talk to you for quite some time. Such important information, and so good to get to know you, Senator Bagby. And I'm so glad that you represent us and that you are advocating for Virginia Voice and for our listeners. So thank you so much. This is Yvonne Mastromano with Virginia Voice, and our special guest for our face-to-face podcast today was Senator Bagby. So thank you again.
Thank you.